Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Our subject is natural therapy for prostate cancer. The book is Thrive, Don't Just Survive. Our guest is Dr. Gio Espinosa. He's a naturopathic physician. He's here in New York. He's at the Langone Medical Center, which is unusual, conventional medical center welcoming a naturopathic physician with an integrative approach to prostate cancer. Finally, they're seeing the light. Because, I mean, there is no question that this is a great boon to patients with prostate cancer. You can't have a urology department and not even pay lip service to the importance of lifestyle, correct?
That's correct. When I hear the word multidisciplinary practice thrown around everywhere. And there is absolutely no multidisciplinary practice if there's no integrative or naturopathic doctor on board. I'm just convinced of that.
Absolutely.
So that's, I like to think that we, at least in urology, we have a real, you know, a real multidisciplinary practice as it relates to prostate cancer and urological diseases.
And I think that among the cancers, and I perhaps you'll agree, is that the proposition of lifestyle modification to enhance survival and to seal the deal after conventional therapy makes more sense than in any other cancer. But, you know, perhaps we might not be able to say that for lung cancer, a very devastating cancer.
Right.
Probably there is a lifestyle correlate, but maybe a little less so because it's a more aggressive, devastating type of cancer. Prostate cancer seems uniquely amenable to what you call the capless method, correct?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I like to think that there is a systemic benefit. I never have a prostate coming into my office. I have a person with a prostate coming in. So I always like to think that there's that cancer anywhere in the body is a body that's cancering. It's not just the prostate or the breast in women. It's a body that's cancering. Who's to say that there's no cancer trying to percolate somewhere else? If there's cancer in the prostate or in the breast, there's cancer trying to percolate somewhere else. So it's very important to look at it that way and to for any good program, anti-cancer program, to have more of a systemic effect. And I think that's what this program does.
Okay, so let's focus on the S in capitalists, which is, where's the D? Diet. Is that under something else? It's under lifestyle?
That's under E. So good question. So E is for eating.
Oh, okay, got it.
I've not been a huge fan of diet, Ron, for a long time, so I try to use it infrequently. Number one, I'm just afraid of the first three words.
The connotation
diet, right?
Of that four-letter word that starts with a D. Yeah. So there's a lot of controversy about, you know, what's the appropriate diet for prostate cancer? Because, you have a full spectrum of opinions on this, ranging from people who say eat paleo, that includes meat, and other people who say radical veganism is the way to go with either a raw foods diet or a macrobiotic diet, no animal products whatsoever. Where do you stand on that?
So I just want to let you and your audience know that I've done an intensive amount of research as it relates to what's the right way of eating, specifically for prostate cancer and even for breast cancer, because, you know, I'm always interested in the breast cancer literature since breast cancer and prostate cancer are like cousins. They're very similar as to how they behave. They're
hormonally mediated. Right.
Right. Right. So and of course, I've looked at paleo and everything else. So here's how it works. Look, Dean Ornish's approach, lifestyle approach, the dietary approach was a low fat plant based. Now the reason, and it seems like it worked very effectively for the amount of time that the study ran, and it's just very difficult to say. Well, wait a minute, is it the meditation? Is it the exercise? Or is it the plant based low fat? Is that or the other? So while I'm all about throwing the kitchen sink at prostate cancer, not just doing one thing, not just, for example, exercising and eating Big Macs and French fries all day, one thing that's a full just take one part and say, well, this is the diet that you need to do.
Right.
So the capitalist way of eating is such that it is a plant based, so a lot of plant foods. With regards to animal products,
so organic grass-fed beef, I do recommend, but not excessively. I'm not yet completely sure that animal proteins and the amino acids, or just amino acids in general, particularly from animal proteins, are not part of the culprit. They're not part of the they don't contribute to prostate cancer. The literature shows that animal protein is not necessarily a problem, but the way you prepare or cook these animal proteins make all the difference in the world. So grilled beef, grilled beef and pork chops, things that blacken the beef on the outside causes the production of heterocyclic amine. So that's a carcinogenic compound, and there's definitely an association with the consumption of overly cooked meat and prostate cancer. Fish is a much superior source of animal protein, except that when it's overly cooked as well, it still can induce increase the risk of aggressive prostate cancer based on studies. So no animal product should be overly cooked is the takeaway there. And the other part is actually intermittent fasting that I find very interesting, Ron, with regards to prostate cancer. So intermittent fasting implies that you constrain from eating within a certain period of time every day. So that my rule of thumb at this time, just to make it appealing for people, is 12 hours a day. So let's say don't eat from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., for example, or 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. You know, that's kind of doable for people. The best cancer method, the best cancer program is the one that's sustainable. Right, because I've seen people do Gerson and things like that, Gerson therapy, and
like
while
heavy juicing, raw foods, and so on.
Yeah, and coffee enemas, and even the program of the late Dr. Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. And while maybe there was a role for this type of approach that works very effectively for pancreatic cancer, which Dr. Gonzalez was an expert in, I'm not quite sure that for prostate cancer that's the way to go. I've seen no evidence of that, not even clinically, and it's just not sustainable. So what I would initially recommend is 12 hours of fasting every day, and that's doable for most people. And a lot of plant foods, particularly the cruciferous vegetables, includes broccoli and Brussels sprouts and cauliflower. Those specifically tend to be more protective against prostate cancer.
Do you have an opinion on soy?
That's a great question. I get asked that very frequently. God, what should I say? Here's the soy story. I believe there's actually a book called The Soy Story. Soy happens to be actually beneficial for most people. The scientific literature on soy is more connected to Asian and done in Asian countries, where it seems to be that Asian people convert some of the soy molecules into something called equal, not equal like the sweetener,
right,
artificial
no.
sweetener. Yeah,
spelled different.
EQUOL, and there seems to be protective benefits with this compound that's a byproduct of soy called EQUAL. Well, not all of us can create EQUAL, so most of the studies have been done there. I'm still not opposed to soy, so that's maybe when I'm not so paleo, based on the overall literature. What I am opposed to, Ron, is the overconsumption of soy, thinking that it's a good thing. So if a little bit is good, a lot must be better. Is, you know, when you start eating these fake soy foods, these tofuties and tofu bacon and tofu burgers, and then people go nuts with, I don't think these, first of all, this is not real food. And what I'm recommending is for people to eat real food. Secondly, soy is very estrogenic. So I think that too much estrogen in a man's body can actually prostate cancer worse. Indeed. So I think with soy, there has to be a certain prescription. If you have a little bit of tofu here and there, no problem. A lot of soy is GMO, by the way, genetically modified.
Right.
So it should be organic. That's the other thing. Miso soup is actually very, very good and protective. And I'm not sure if fermented soy versus non-fermented soy makes a big difference as it relates to prostate cancer.
What about supplements? When it comes to supplements, you quote a very eminent physician in the chapter on supplements. I see here.
That is indeed the case. Would you like to repeat the quote and tell your audience who that eminent doctor?
Yeah,
is?
Let's see. I'll look it up here. It's on page. I have the manuscript right in front of me.
See here.
Yeah, I have it here. It's make it so no self-respecting cancer would ever want to inhabit your prostate.
That's right.
And that's by an eminent physician by the name of Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's one of my favorite sayings. So thank you for including it in your book.
It is. It is. No, thank you for mentioning it. That's a good one.
So what are some of those supplements?
You know, the right judicial selected supplement recommendation is a very important part of the overall arsenal against prostate cancer, so that one can create an inhospitable environment to these cancer cells. So that's the goal. So some of the supplements that I think are very, very helpful are things like, for example, vitamin D at about 4,000 units a day. Now, some people go higher. Some people like to go 10,000 units. They want to see blood markers, you know, anywhere about 90 or 100 nanograms per milliliter. I'm not quite sure that that is beneficial. There's not enough research to say, hey, 90, you know, a blood level of 90 of vitamin D or 25 hydroxy vitamin D is better than 50. I'm not quite sure that that's the case. We don't know. So I like my patients to be around 40, between 50 and 60.
Mm-hmm.
So I use about 4,000. And there's some research indicating that 4,000 units is beneficial for prostate cancer of vitamin D3. The other is curcumin, which is from the Indian spice. I mean, there's a plethora of research indicating that curcumin is anti-cancer and anti-inflammatory and really stops cancer cells in its traps. So curcumin is, I think, an integral part of any cancer program. I like grapeseed extract. There's one research study that showed that in a group of 35,000 men followed for a long time who were taking several supplements, only grapeseed extract lowered the risk of prostate cancer by 41%. And again, looking at a group of men of 35,000 men. So that was pretty interesting, and it makes sense. It has good antioxidant type of approaches, and I'm not sure, you know, there might be other benefits there. I do modified citrus pectin. I like the medicinal mushrooms. All of them are probably fine. I probably get at least one question asked on, you know, turkey tail or any other type of mushroom. My favorite is reishi mushroom or Ganoderma.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's my favorite mostly because for some reason there's a lot of research with reishi mushroom indicating that it increases the production of very important immune cells like T lymphocytes and natural killer cells. These cells they go out and they look for cancer cells and they try to get rid of them. So these are very important very important immune cells.
Those are some of the highlights. Rather than go into an exhaustive list, I would refer people to your book because there's a very comprehensive list of dietary supplements there, which include. It's sort of a cocktail, and I think men have to be committed to taking, you know, it may seem, well, why can't you just take one pill? Doesn't one, you know, multivitamin or something incorporate all the nutrients you need? I think you need to take a more targeted approach when you're dealing with cancer. I think you would agree.
Absolutely, absolutely. Part of the arsenal approach is we're trying to do five things here, Ron, and very quickly and briefly, I'll state them. You're trying to decrease systemic inflammation. You're trying to improve immunity. You're trying to improve detoxification in the body so the body gets rid of the environmental carcinogens that we're sometimes exposed to. We're trying to protect the body from oxidative stress with balanced act antioxidants. Let me repeat that. Balanced amounts of antioxidants. Why am I emphasizing that? Because when one tries to isolate one antioxidant, like DL-alpha-tocopherol, which is a very small component of vitamin E, then you can increase the risk of prostate cancer. So you need a wide, balanced amount of antioxidants, things like mixed tocopherols in vitamin E, higher in gamma tocopherol. And there's a lot of literature and scientific references in the book. Alpha lipoic acid, very important. Not just vitamin C, you know, not just vitamin C, perhaps with bioflavonoids or mixed with alpha lipoic acid and vitamin E, so on and so forth. And then the fifth element is controlling blood sugar levels and overproduction of insulin. That's a very important element. And so that's not necessarily affected with dietary supplements. It's more with lifestyle and not eating sugars and exercise. And I do like metformin which is a medical too. In some cases, prescribing lower dose metformin in some prostate cancer cases actually is very good.
I'd say, yeah, there's some good studies that suggest that it might increase survival and reduce the risk of recurrence. So, and finally, you know, let's pay some lip service briefly to exercise. What's the deal? I mean, can you literally, walk for cancer or run for cancer?
That's absolutely correct. They looked at two studies recently that it was both studies combined accumulated to about 25,000 men, and they've been followed for about 20 years. And they looked at six elements, whether or not they ate fish, whether or not they ate tomatoes, whether or not they smoked or stopped smoking within the last 10 years, and whether or not they exercised. Exercise really with moderate intensity, not just a brisk walk. And when they looked at all these elements, they said, well, at least five out of the six were very important in reducing the risk of lethal and deadly prostate cancer. And when you look deeper into the research and say, well, you know, because I'm always interested in it, so, okay, what would be that one thing? I think patients should do everything, and that's been proven that the more you do, the better you do. But, you know, I'm interested. I'm curious. What's that one thing that stands out? And when you look at that one thing that stood out, it was the exercising with moderate intensity. Wow. In terms of reducing the risk of lethal and deadly prostate cancer.
Wow.
Right?
Impressive.
So there's a prescription there. And the amount that where the literature shows is very clear is a minimum. I tell my patients, a minimum on a bad week, if you're having a bad exercise week, you need to give me 3 hours a week. On a bad week, mm-hmm. 3 hours a week.
Yep.
I like my patients to hover around 4 to 5 hours a week, mm-hmm. with moderate intensity, and we go into those details.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I would qualify for that, but I'm sort of at the high end of exercise. It probably you are too. It's hard to get some men to get off their duff, but it does make a big difference when it comes to outcomes. All right, so, okay, great. And with stress, of course, important, and you talk about it in the book. I think everybody acknowledges that stress has an impact. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? What are some resources that, in addition to the book, first of all, the book is available. It's in bookstores. I see it everywhere nowadays. It's going to be a bestseller.
Oh, thank you.
And also, do you have a website where you talk a little bit about these issues?
So I devoted a whole website because I'm trying to put together and develop a group of thrivers, what we call capitalist thrivers. So the book website is Thrive Don't Only Survive. That's one word, thrivedontonlysurvive.com. And that book is found in many places, especially in Amazon. Amazon is up on Amazon as a bestseller. So I'm very grateful for that. So Thrive Don't Only Survive, Dr. Geo, that's Geo with an E, not an I. And drgeo.com is my blog, if anybody wants to look at that as well.
Ed, you're ubiquitous on Facebook as well. People can like you on Facebook, and you tweet a lot.
That's right.
So Twitter,
yeah,
followers can get the latest dispatches from the front from today's guest, Dr. Geo Espinosa. Geo, it's been a pleasure having you on the program, and I really value you as a colleague with a laser-like focus on this important issue. Thanks so much for writing the book, and much success.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Ron. Pleasure to be here.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.